As you enter into deep meditation, be sure that your intentions are pure. That you are attending deeply within in order to secure union with God. And humbly open the heart and wait upon the presence of God. Keep the mind empty of chatter, completely clean, receptive, surrendered to the Supreme Being, without image, without concept, without demand or desire. And offer up the ego and its falseness so that God may come and bring you into the real. There must be no trace of doubt or fear. And God can only appear when the ego has disappeared. And that appearance will be in the form of love. Blissful love. the will to awaken to the supreme, infinite, eternal self must overcome the tamasic ego's desire to sleep and to remain separate in a bodily identity rather than ascend into the infinite spirit. The consciousness must abandon its illusory form to realize the formless. The absolute self. Love the silence, for it is the medium of God's presence. Love the emptiness, for it is the container of the fullness. Of the supreme consummation of love. The portal to God is the now. Any thought will take you away from the now. Choose presence over thought. Are you saturated in the bliss of God's presence? Fertilizing the golden egg in the heart so that divine rebirth becomes reality. abide in the absolute stillness of true being. Eternally awake, Shiva. Parameshvaraya. Parashakti. Parabrahman. Shivaya, Shiva Nama. Om Shivaham. Om. Stay. We'll continue with Sri Ramana's teachings from Thus Spake Ramana. We're on number 79. What is realization? Is it to see God with four hands, bearing a conch, wheel, club, etc.? I doubt any of you had that thought. But even if God should appear in that form, which he might if you were an Orthodox Hindu, or if he would appear in the form of Christ, or Mother Mary, or Buddha on a lotus leaf, or Vishnu lying in an ocean of milk, or in any other form, would that be realization? So, even if God should appear in any form, how is the disciples' ignorance wiped out by such a vision? Would it really be of any benefit to you other than to have something to talk about, to impress other people with? Would there be any transformation from a vision like that? Such appearance is phenomenal and illusory. All perceptions, sensory perceptions, are indirect or secondary knowledge. This is very significant because the modern age is built on the philosophy of empiricism, which says that this knowledge through the senses is primary, not secondary. There's been an entire shift in the appreciation of the value and even the awareness of the possibility of direct knowledge that is not through the senses, because the senses lie. And they require interpretations. They require language. They require a symbolic grid. So there are several levels of separation from the real through anything that is sensed. Whether it is sensed as if it were a phenomenal reality or a hallucination. Would a vision of God be reality or hallucinatory? But aren't they both hallucinatory in the sense that they are simply projections that are emanating from the consciousness and causing a separation from the direct knowledge of the self that is in fact the dreamer and the cause of the dream of all that appears? So, Ramana goes on, the truth must be eternal realization. Eternal. Eternal doesn't mean perpetual. It doesn't mean, oh, if it lasts a long time, then it's real. If the vision doesn't go away. No, it's not that. Eternal is the now. It's what takes you out of time into the real, because time itself is a secondary phenomenon. Because reality doesn't appear in a linear succession of events. It's all here now. And only when it's all here now are you all here now. And that is the realization. So, the direct perception is ever-present experience. There must be a seer. The present superimposition of the body as the I is so deep-rooted that the vision before the eyes is considered pratyaksha, meaning, as we saw before, self-evident, but not the seer himself. So the I is the seer, not the body through which the sensory perception of secondary phenomena are perceived. The seer alone is real and eternal, but no one knows what the seer is anymore because the seer is identified with the mechanism through which sensory perception is received. And therefore, there is identification with the body. And as soon as that happens, the seer is lost. The real self is forgotten. And once there is identification with the body, because the body's mortal, it suffers pain, it's very hypersensitive to change, there's anxiety, there's fear. And then to compensate that, there are defense mechanisms. And a succession of layers of superimposition of buffers against the real, because the real is traumatic once there is identification with the body, because the real is the only real that is recognized then is what we call real one. Real one is the mortal body and its world of pain. No one wants to be in that without defense mechanisms, without drugs, without cigarettes, without alcohol, without boyfriends and girlfriends, without all the bufferings of a comfort zone that keeps one from facing the truth. So, Brahmana says the seer alone is real and eternal. If you are not the eternal seer, you're not the real seer. You are simply a subject, meaning subjected to the phenomenal matrix of karma that creates particular events that get seen in order to awaken you. And often it's only pain and sickness and suffering that can awaken you. And therefore that karma becomes the engine of liberation until one has discovered who is the seer and that you are the creator of your own karma, not the victim of it. So, abiding in the self and being the self, not seeing the self, because the self can't be seen. The self isn't a Hindu god or a Christian god or a god of any kind that can be perceived with the eyes. And so it is being the self that is realization. Now, you know, Hinduism is a very late form of what was called the Adi Sanatan Dharma. And originally, they didn't have four-armed gods and this whole panoply of gods and goddesses of different shapes, including the theriomorphic ones, the animals, and the gods who would incarnate as animals or as trees or as other kinds of beings, that created a kind of a pantheistic approach to reality. But that was already a secondary metaphoric attempt to explain the fact that all is God, all is the one self. But the original form in which God was worshipped was as a candle flame. It's the candle flame that is the original form of what then became the Shiva Lingam. But the candle flame is not a lingam. The candle flame is the ovum. This is the Hiranyagarbha, the golden egg of eternal life. And therefore the flame had to be eternal. It had to become an eternal light. That was the primary symbol that was the basis of all of the religions of Kali Yuga. They would take the candle, however, and put it at the peak of the highest mountains because you wanted a peak experience and God should be worshipped at the highest level. The problem is there's a lot of wind at the high mountains and the flame would go out. So they made the flame as a statue in stone. You can see that. So the Shiva Lingam is an ovum in stone within the yoniverse in which all things arise and are born. And because we have turned to stone and we have lost touch with our eternal life, that stone became the symbol of the Kali-yugi god. Now, when the time came that this was too abstract for people to understand, and instead they made images of the people who had become avatars by worshiping and becoming embodiments of the eternal light, like Narayana and Lakshmi, and all of the gods and goddesses that we all know their names, and they gave them four arms or eight arms or 1,000 arms as metaphors that they had a big support system. It didn't have anything to do with their anatomy. These were all metaphors. But because people forgot they were metaphors and began to worship idols, there was a revolt against them. And the famous rebel against idol worship was a guy named Avram, who was later given the name Abrahman, or Abraham, who became the founder of what became the Jewish tradition. Now, he went with his pal, Melchizedek. You've heard of him. Melchizedek. Melech is king. Tzedek is defined now as charity, but it's not charity in the way we think of charity. Tzedek is more like tzaddik or a sadhu, whose charity is that he wanders on eternal pilgrimage, giving the truth and the eternal love and the eternal light to all those he meets. This is the fulfillment of the Christian commandment of Christ. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Love whoever is near as a shivalingam, as a realization that they are also the one self, not another. So there will be no estrangement, no conflict, no war. And so Avram and Melchizedek took Shiva lingams from the Ganges and walked all the way to Palestine and created places of that had powerful vortices of energy, earth energy, and there became holy spots, holy temples. And then when they got back to sea level, they could turn it back into a candle flame, which they called the Ner Tamid, or the eternal light. And you'll still see it, although probably in an electric version, in any synagogue that you go to. But most of the Jews have no clue as to what it means. You'll also see it in the churches as the star above and behind the cross. That's the Father. And that is the source of the worship. The whole point of that movement was to stop worshiping idols. Now, today, people don't tend in the West to worship idols with four arms or even guys hanging on a cross anymore. But what they do tend to worship is other people that they have projected their own superego figure on, usually the mother. And so it's very important not to make an idol out of Ananda Mayi Ma and not worship her as an idol of the Great Mother. The ovum and the universe that are to be worshipped is the all-encompassing reality that is emanated from that infinitesimal point of beingness that is the self. And the worship of the self is not a worship of a vision, whether through the secondary phenomena of the senses or a primary sense of a presence of Shakti, but of the self that is the seer, the perceiver, the knower, that cannot be known as an object. And so it is the sacrifice. And getting back now to that point of charity, the word comes from the Sanskrit charitra, which is the performance of divine consciousness within the world. And it is this that became the inspiration that the sages would have on others, because the sage would light your light if it had gone out or turned to stone, through the emanation of that power of eternal life that alone can open the heart and bring one back into that yearning for being the self that is the only salvation from suffering. So that word, if we take it back to its origins, and how it evolved through Latin and Greek, we see the word caritas before charity. But caritas came from kama in Sanskrit. Kama means desire. So you see, love and desire are mixed at the level of body consciousness. If you're in the body ego, you can't have love without desire. But that love, if it is not the love that is divine, becomes lust and becomes impurity. But if the desire is sublimated and is intended as the engine of one's ascension to the purity of that divine love through the sacrifice of the ego, of the body-identified consciousness, then what had become a desire to take becomes the capacity to give, the generosity that generates a world of love. And so the char of charity, in French, char is body, isn't it? And in English, to char something is to burn it. It is the burning of body consciousness in the sacrificial fire that creates again the ascension to the true nature of the self that is no longer dependent upon its body or the secondary phenomena of sensory information, but now has direct knowledge as the dreamer of the dream. It is this that must be the work of self-transformation and realization that cannot come from any experience of anything that is not the self, and not any emblem, symbol, metaphor, or representation of the self. No matter how beautiful, how good, how royal, how pure that being might be, can be a substitute for the realization of your own being that cannot be pictured, imagined, conceived of, or known except through that final, ultimate sacrifice of the I that seeks redemption through becoming fused with the source of being, which must be found in and as your own heart. May you follow the advice of Sri Ramana and realize the self as you truly are. May you have the peace that comes of realizing the truth of love. Lacan said, love is giving what you don't have. But in the case of love of God, it's receiving what you can't get. And may you know that which you can't get by realizing it's what you are. And you can only give what you are. And that is the milk of loving kindness. The milk is from the melech, the king, who has all the cows and gives the milk so that everyone has the nourishment they need for life. May you have that spiritual nourishment to share, because it's overflowing from your own heart. And may you have the deeper peace of realizing the source, the wellspring of loving kindness, in the purity of the power of being that is eternal life. And through that immortal, eternal presence, be able to fulfill all of those who come for help with the offer of an unconditional love that does not judge, does not reject, does not create barriers, but is in total acceptance of all that arises. And may you know that supreme sovereignty that is the peace that passeth all possible understanding of the mind in the absolute royalty of the Lord of the universe, that is the true nature of yourself. Namaste. Namaste.